It's time now for Super Psychologist, Dr. Mara Karpel, and your golden years.
And welcome to Dr. Mara Karpel and your golden years this evening and every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. Central Time and at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on blogtalkradio.com and on drmarakarpel.com. And today is Sunday, April 15th, and we are back in beautiful Austin, Texas, and Art Mendoza, excuse me, of Accomplice Entertainment, producer of this program, is here with us making the show run. Today is an auspicious day, as it was on April 15th, 1992, that I received my doctorate. I can't believe it's been that long. It's been quite the journey. I cannot easily forget that day because it's tax day. So happy tax day. And this journey brought me right here to speak with you on internet radio. So the outcome has been great so far. And we have a really great program on internet radio here for you this evening. And in a little while after the break, we'll be joined on the phone from New York by Roberta Liner, who is the daughter of Rabbi Robert Marcus, and we spoke about his heroic story last week, his story during the Holocaust, and as it was written in the book, Einstein and the Rabbi, and we spoke with Rabbi Naomi Levy, and you can hear that interview from last week by going to my podcast on my website. And this evening, Roberta Liner, his daughter, is joining us, and she is currently the Chief of Population and Community Health Planning at Hudson River Healthcare, and she worked for many years as Senior Vice President of Agency Relations and Managing Director of the Caring Commission for the UJA Federation of New York, the world's largest local philanthropic organization. And Roberta will be joining us to talk about living with the legacy of her larger-than-life father and how it has driven her life. And then later in the program, Rochelle Rabone will be joining us once again from Dallas to talk about her music. And along the way, I will talk about forgiveness and self-love. And throughout this evening's program, we will have time to take your questions. So if you have any questions or comments for me or for my guests, please feel free to give a call. The toll-free number is 855-345-4720. That's 855-345-4720. Or you can email your questions to me, and I will read them on the air to my guests. And my email address is Dr. Mara, that's D-R-M-A-R-A, drmarakarpel.com. Sorry, jump the gun. Dr. Mara at drmarakarpel.com. DrMaraKarpel. And you can hear this evening's program again by going to my website, drmarakarpel.com. And the podcast will be posted later tonight, along with any website links or information given by my guests on the program. And you can also hear the podcast as soon as 5 minutes after the show ends by going directly to Blog Talk Radio, that's blogtalkradio.com/yourgoldenyears. And for information from previous shows, to listen to previous podcasts, to read my blogs in Thrive Global and Huffington Post, find more out about my upcoming book, what else? Watch videos of guests that I've interviewed in our Austin office. You can do all of that on my website at drmarakarpel.com. So that is a one-stop shop, drmarakarpel.com. And you can also hear all of the podcasts of the shows that we have done here with Blog Talk Radio by going directly to blogtalkradio.com www.yourgoldenyears.com/yourgoldenyears. And for information about upcoming events and to find out about shows that are coming up, whenever a blog goes into print, or find out the latest information about my book, all of that is on Facebook at Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years. And also my book's Facebook page, which is The Passionate Life at Dr. Mara Karpel, by The Passionate Life by Dr. Mara Karpel. Both of those are on Facebook. And if this is the first time that you're tuning in, I'm a licensed psychologist from New York City, practicing here in Austin, Texas, and in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. And I work with adults of all ages and have a specialty of working with seniors and with caregivers. And for the past few years, have also been evaluating veterans for PTSD. And part of the time, my office is in the really great Veterans Resource Center, which is located in Cedar Park, Texas, called Heroes Night Out. And you can find out more information about this wonderful resource for veterans and for veterans' families by checking out their website, heroesnightout.org. Now, if you have any information that you think that I ought to know about, or if you have any questions for me, you can feel free to contact me. And my email address is, again, is drmara@drmarakartel.com. You can also go through my website and click the contact link and send me an email that way, or you can call me at 512-626-6973. This evening's program is produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Spiked Up Productions, and sponsored by Dr. Ronald DeVere, neurologist, memory specialist, and author of the book, Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask. To make an appointment with Dr. DeVere at his memory clinic in Lakeway, Texas, or to purchase a copy of his book, you can call him at 512-261-7909, or you can send him an email to rdevere, that's rdevere, at austin.rr.com. And his book is also available on Amazon. And this evening's program is also sponsored by StoryHouse. StoryHouse gathers your stories and turns them into multimedia collections that can be shared now and for generations to come. Have StoryHouse over to conduct a private interview in your home or invite them to your next big event or family reunion. StoryHouse, where your memories live. Find out more at yourstoryhouse.com or call 5296-8752. Okay, so we're going to take a brief break. We're going to play some commercials from our sponsors. And when we come back, Roberta Liner will be joining us on the phone from New York to talk about how living in the legacy of Rabbi Robert Marcus has influenced her life. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Super psychologist Dr. Mara Karpel will be back after words from our sponsors.
Worried about memory loss? Dr. Ronald DeVere, certified neurologist and director of Alzheimer's disease and memory disorders in Lakeway, has been helping those with dementia and memory loss for over 12 years, specializing in the diagnosis, treatment, and counseling of those with memory loss and dementia. Dr. DeVere also has a book to reduce your worry and fear by knowing the facts. Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask, available now on Amazon.com. Dr. Ronald DeVere, Alzheimer's Disease and Memory Disorders Center in Lakeway, and his book, Memory Loss, Everything You Want to Know But Forget to Ask. For more information or to schedule an appointment, call 512-261-7909.
Please visit us on the web at www.drmarakarpel.com.
And we're back. If you're just joining us, this is Dr. Mara Karpel and Your Golden Years right here on blogtalkradio.com and on drmarakarpel.com. And now joining us on the phone from New York, we have Roberta Liner, who is the daughter of the hero that we talked about last week when Naomi Levy joined us to talk about her book. And now Roberta is here to talk about her side of the story. Good evening, Roberta.
Hi, Mara. How are you doing? It's great to be on your show.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us.
And congratulations to you on your anniversary of the receipt of your PhD.
Yeah, I forgot all about it until I was writing the date. And I was like, oh, April 15th. That rings the bell.
Right, great.
So,
great.
Long time ago.
Yeah. It's like yesterday, really.
Yeah, it feels like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So, Roberta, as you know, last week, Rabbi Naomi Levy joined us on the phone to talk about her book, Einstein and the Rabbi. And she, you know, that book was inspired by her journey, her obsession, really, to find out who this man was who Einstein had written such a deep and spiritual letter to, and how it influenced her life when she found out about your dad. And so I felt like it was really important to have you on the program as daughter of this man, this hero, Rabbi Robert Marcus, and talk to mm-hmm. us about your experience and how it influenced your life growing up with that legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we, you know, for people who didn't listen last week, maybe we can talk first a little bit about who your father was.
Right. Well, I'd first like to publicly thank you for having Rabbi Levy on your show last week, and to really thank Rabbi Levy. I hope she's listening or she'll hear your podcast, because mm-hmm. Of all that she has done to raise the profile of my father, showcasing to her readership and to her viewership. As you know, she has many speaking engagements. To be able to sort of highlight what a great man my father was. And I think she might have even used the term, he was an unsung hero. And so now with increasingly wider audiences, people are learning about my dad. And I think she's a beautiful writer, and with, tenderness and elegance, she really has illuminated, you know, through incredible prose, the power of who my dad was and who he continues to be. And so I will be forever grateful. I feel as if I was on a 3-year journey. I think that might have been the period of time that it took for Naomi to write the book, and she did lots of research and thoughtful research. And my sister and I provided her with lots of information that we had concerning my dad. And so we had some very thoughtful exchanges along the way. So again, I'm very appreciative. So I myself have always been inspired by the legacy of my dad. And interestingly, the book, Einstein and the Rabbi, has shown me that what I carry in my heart really is not necessarily should be seen as a legacy that's handed to me, but that my father's presence lives on through me and in me. And mm-hmm. I really got that in the book. It's such a complex book, and it's more than just about my dad. He might have inspired, the writing of this book, but Naomi brings so much rich experience and understanding of the spiritual realm and the role of the soul. So it really enabled me to really see that it's not just that I have, once again, sort of this legacy that's out there, but it very much resides within me. So
yeah, in terms that's of some, very deep.
It really is. In a recent email exchange with a professional colleague of mine, you know, when I was talking about my dad, she wrote back saying, you know, Roberta, Chaplain Robert Marcus is within you. And then she proceeds to say, good evening, Chaplain Marcus. It's very nice to meet you. And so that was epiphany for me. It was I really experienced that very deeply. So in terms of a little background about my father that Naomi has in the book, he was born in 1909 in Jersey City, and in 1931 he became an Orthodox rabbi. And he was a pulpit rabbi for, I would say, a relatively short amount of time because he had a higher calling for social justice work. And he wanted, you know, a larger sphere within which to do this kind of work. And, you know, synagogue life has its limitations. And he became very involved with the American Jewish Congress and the Joint Boycott Council. And he led a national boycott of Nazi goods. Hmm. And from 1942 to 1946, he served as a captain and a chaplain in the U.S. Army and entered Buchenwald, the concentration camp Buchenwald, as part of the liberating forces. And there he found a thousand boys who were hidden away, and half of whom he personally transported to France. And Elie Wiesel was one of the boys that was part of this group that he took to France. And Rabbi Naomi Levy had an opportunity to interview Elie Wiesel about my dad, you know, shortly before he died. And that was very, very special. On a separate excursion, my dad transported 1,000 survivors to Palestine. And if I might just read something that he wrote, if that's all right.
Yes, please do.
So after the war, my father was appointed the first political director of the World Jewish Congress, and he wrote extensively, and he submitted much to the United Nations, which is all of his work has been published. And he says, in terms of his experience, it's a lengthy article. I'm just going to read a paragraph about Buchenwald. He writes, I have seen the misery of my people, and my heart aches with a gnawing pain. It is not only the inhuman suffering they have undergone, not only their terror-stricken eyes, the ghastly pallor that comes from living in crannies without sunlight or air, in mortal fear of the Gestapo. It is their degradation, the humiliation of their position, which has affected me most. They are as the floating dust, like the withered grass. I thought I knew the fascist criminal and the level of barbarism to which he could descend. Yes, I thought I knew it all until I saw the faces of my brethren, until I saw the blood-stained torture chambers in which many of them died.
Hmm. Wow.
So, my dad, after the war, or as the liberations were unfolding, conducted several Jewish services in Holland and Belgium during the liberation of these countries. And he officiated at the first Passover observance in conquered Germany. And he continues after the war to write, but during the war, or at the conclusion, I think it was in June 1945, he led a sermon to a group of interfaith soldiers when rededicating a chapel. I think it's called Memorial Chapel. And if I might read something a little longer, and the reason I ask if I might read this is because I am extraordinarily inspired by what my father has written. We have reams and reams and thousands of pages of poetry and prose and actual descriptions of his experiences, and it's been that, having that, which has really inspired me in many ways. Mm-hmm. So he writes, and this is just a bit longer, if I might.
Okay, yeah, please. Mm-hmm.
It is fitting and proper that this chapel, which is being dedicated this evening to the service of God as a place of divine worship for all faiths, should be called Memorial Chapel. Anything that symbolizes the democratic cause for which our buddies have died, it is the ability of freedom-loving people to find a common denominator in their spiritual lives. The dedication of this chapel to the worship of our Heavenly Father by all faiths brings home to us the undeniable truth that there is a strong bond of brotherhood which transcends differences of religion and creed. And if we are really to honor those who gave their lives that freedom should not die, it is necessary for us to strengthen the ties that bind us one to another and to eradicate the prejudices, bigotry, and intolerance which divide and alienate us one from another. These men who died were not asked, "What is your faith?" When they went out to serve their country, these heroes were not asked, "What is your religion?" When they went out to battle a vicious enemy, nor was such a question in place. They were all brothers defending a civilization and a way of life which is predicated on freedom of conscience and the right of every man to serve our Heavenly Father in whatever manner he chooses to do so. And let us remember and never forget that unless those who write the peace are motivated by the concept of universal brotherhood of all peace-loving peoples, that we will sow the seeds of a third and more terrible world war, that the sacrifices of those whom we are honoring this evening shall have been in vain. For alas, many of us are afraid of the scraps of information which filter through about conditions back home, of Jewish kids attacked on the street of our great cities, of a rising tide of anti-Semitism, of anti-Negro and other anti-democratic manifestations. On the Liberty Bell at Independence Hall in Philadelphia, there is inscribed the biblical passage, "Proclaim liberty through the land to all inhabitants there," end of quote. This briefly is what our buddies have given their lives for, liberty for all the inhabitants of our land, for we are all brothers.
Hmm. Well, that's beautiful. And
very prescient in terms of what's going on today.
Yes, very timely. Very timely.
Right. So after the war, my dad, as I mentioned before, was appointed political director of the World Jewish Congress. It was the first position ever. And his role was helping stateless and displaced Jews find a new home. And that took him around the world to South America, throughout Europe. He probably spent very little time at home with his family. And in 1949, while he was in Europe, my eldest brother, Jay, got very ill. My father came home, but unfortunately, Jay died before he arrived home. He died of polio there was a terrible polio epidemic at that time. Mm-hmm. And it was the trauma and deep and powerful, loss that my father and my mother experienced that for my dad, it drove him to write to Albert Einstein concerning afterlife and the soul. And Naomi, as she spoke to you on the show last week, her book is inspired by the exchange between Albert Einstein and my father. And unfortunately, my dad died a year and a half after Jay's death at age 41 in January 1951. And at the time, my mother was 7 months pregnant with me, and then I was born March 1951.
So you were born into this legacy.
I was born into this, yes, right.
Mm-hmm.
The, sort of I sometimes talk about the intergenerational transmission of trauma, because here it is, you know, it's right on the heels of the Holocaust. My dad firsthand experienced, you know, tremendous loss in terms of the work that he did as a chaplain overseas. And then, you know, while he's doing this extraordinary work and caretaking of the world, his precious child dies, and I believe that's the worst tragedy that can happen, befall a parent. And then my dad dies, and my mother has two children, and then I'm born into this. And at the time, you know, the sort of the professionalization of bereavement counseling and grief counseling just did not exist, you know. You know, the impact of such tremendous loss has had its effects on, you know, my family. But it's my mother was an extraordinary, resilient woman, and my siblings very capable in their life and, you know, succeeded in tremendous ways professionally. But it was, you know, it was obviously tremendous sense of loss permeated my family. I just recently, in sort of preparing for today a little bit, thinking and looking at some of the materials I have, I found my father's will, which he rewrote right after Jay died. And he writes, on August 14th, 1949, my darling, gifted and unforgettable son, Jay Joshua, was suddenly taken from our midst. I will always remember him as a noble spirit created in the image of God, the essence of all that is good and uplifting in this suffering world. I will love him through eternity with a steadfastness that comes from my soul. He writes, it is my most earnest hope that my children, Stephen and Tamara, recognizing I wasn't born yet, will always be thoughtful of each other, that they will be considerate, tender, and kind to their mother, and that they will grow up to be loyal Jews and seekers after truth and justice.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's very, you know, this legacy, this powerful legacy of my father was shared with me growing up through, you know, family. And I would say very importantly to me was because my dad was so prolific and we had so much of what he wrote, that as a child I would spend a lot of time rummaging through the base, wherever we were living at the time. The material was either in the basement or in the attic. Naomi can attest to that. She came to my house to look through, might go in my dusty attic and look at papers. But I came to know my dad through his writings. He was just a very powerful source of, social justice. He was a beautiful and gifted writer, and as I understand, a great speaker. And all of what I read provided me great insight and comfort and inspiration.
Yeah, you're certainly and lucky to have that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like your dad was speaking to you.
Right, right. What has resonated probably most deeply with me is sort of the interweaving of the threads of my dad's both profound commitment to the ideals and values of democracy and justice for all, and then his most passionate and compassionate heart. And he advocated for an interconnected world where we are all responsible one for the other. But unfortunately, in this last year, from 1949 until he died, you know, the death of my brother Jay ripped at his soul, and I think cast him into a place of deep loneliness and emptiness and separation. And his outreach to Einstein was seeking a scientific pathway back to his soul and a path to wholeness.
So I hope that captures
my dad.
Yes. Yes, very beautifully. And I do want to mention it was very, very coincidental that we scheduled Naomi to be on the show last week and you on the show this week. I had no idea of, you know, we just did it based on when people were available. And it turned out that Tuesday was the anniversary of the liberation of Buchenwald. And was it Tuesday or Wednesday? And then the next day. Right. So that was the Wednesday. And then Thursday was Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Yeah.
So
it was an extraordinary, as you say, nexus of events this past week. And first it was started by your interview on Sunday with Naomi, and then she wrote a beautiful piece in the Jewish Forward, sort of commemorating the liberation of Buchenwald, and she very much focused on the role that my father played. And then there was this fabulous movie produced by PBS called G.I. Jews, The Story of Jewish American Soldiers During World War II. And my sister had been interviewed at length, and the producer took many pictures. And though my dad was not featured in that movie, it was really beautifully well done. And there are pictures of my father throughout, and my mother, and my brother Jay, and my brother Stephen, and my cousin Jack. So if people, you can locate that if you go online. It's really an excellent film that really describes the experience of Jewish soldiers during combat and during war.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. So you know, it sounds like, you know, we talked about the setting where, you know, what you were born into. And how, you know, you and I have spoken privately about how this has affected your life, how it has influenced and inspired your life. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it has deeply inspired my life. And I must say that my mother as well was the source of inspiration, and my grandparents, my mother and her family are very progressive in their perspectives of the world. And I believe my father held, you know, a very comparable positions. And so I grew up not only with the sort of legacy of my dad, but the practices of my family in the present in terms of embracing social justice causes. And it inspired me to become a social worker. And And so even as a little girl growing up, I think I might have been in third or fourth grade, I used to organize bazaars on the, you know, for with the activities for children in the in my community as a fundraiser. This is as a little kid. I was organizing the entire block, and I remember raising funds for the Heart Association.
Wow.
So just as a little girl and through my teen years, and I always pursued sort of community-oriented volunteerism and sort of led me to a professional path of being a social worker. And I, the first part of my career, I was very involved in child welfare services for all communities and youth development. And I was very much the community organizer. I was not really interested in being the caseworker, but I saw, you know, the world through a macro lens of opportunity and community building. And then when I approached age 50, I sort of had this epiphany that I wanted to work in the Jewish community. And I don't know where that was coming from. I mean, now I, after reading Naomi's book, I mean, it was probably the voice of my father from within. I just had this desire, a strong desire, and I was doing very well in my professional life at the time. There was no reason to change direction. But then one day I opened the New York Times, and there was this beautifully stated job, a managing director of the Caring Commission for UJA Federation. And I applied for it, and I was fortunate to get that job. And then I spent the next 14 years doing incredibly wonderful work in the Jewish community on behalf of the Jewish community and the non-Jewish community as well. And interestingly, the key issues that I worked on with spiritual care, end-of-life care, palliative care, issues of death and dying, incorporating spiritual practices into non-traditional settings and incorporating spiritual care into health and human service agencies. And so there was, I would say I was responsible with, of course, my team of creating New York State's first residential hospice under Jewish auspice. And so I believe the issues that were swirling in my life growing up on matters of coping with death and dying really impacted the professional direction that I shaped while at UJA Federation. So it was enormously special experience.
Yeah. So, and you feel like that was really kind of, you know, inspired by your dad's life, maybe whispering in your soul.
Yes. that's what it is. Right. I hadn't thought of it that way. I could say that the Einstein and the rabbi sort of opened up my eyes a little more to, you know, the soul from within, the soul that is yearning. I just do believe that, you know, I've been very influenced by the extraordinary person that my father was and that he continues to be as he lives through me.
I mean, it's interesting because you have mentioned to me that you were not, you know, you were not very involved in the Jewish community before you decided to take that job.
I know. Right? I mean, that's where I'm saying, like, all of a sudden I had this deep yearning, a deep yearning to work in the organized Jewish community, not just on behalf of the Jewish community, but I wanted to be in the Jewish communal structure. And I had no contacts. You know, I knew no one in the Jewish communal world. And so people had said to me, there's no way you're going to land a job, you know. And it was like, it was Bashar, for your audience, that means it was meant to be. I went after that job, you know, in terms of what I put in my cover letter and my interviews and this and the other. And it was I felt like I died and arrived in certain ways. And I just felt so, you know, so grateful. And, you know, my family was so proud of me and feeling that I was carrying on some of the work of my dad, you know, narrowly speaking. But I just felt that there was a powerful imperative to do this. I said, it wasn't coming from a place where, oh, I was involved in organized Jewish life in such a way that this made sense, you know?
Right.
And I loved it. I loved it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting because, you know, we've talked about that, that sometimes your soul is calling you in a way that you may not even know why.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah,
but it feels so strong. It feels like, well, I have to do it. I don't know why. There's no sense to it, but I just have to do it.
Yes. Yeah. That's how, yep.
So, you know, I'm wondering, do you have some words of wisdom for who, you know, I mean, it's a very inspiring story, and I think it can inspire all of us. And I'm just wondering if you and your position have any words of wisdom for people listening.
I think that I've always tried to sort of listen to that voice within, not always knowing, you know, what the source of that is. And to take, you know, I could say, at least in my professional life, take extraordinary professional risks to do the right thing. The right thing, whether it's motivated by my sense of what is right or it's externally identified as something that needs to be challenged. And I've had mostly wonderful experiences, you know, approaching, you know, my, at least once again in my professional life, taking risks and doing what it takes in order to get something done. And so I the only wisdom that I really have is that, you know, for people, you know, to embrace an opportunity that might be at their fingertips, might be even further away, and to go for it and do what it takes to enable yourself to achieve what you might believe is an essential goal that you would like to accomplish. That there are many barriers, you know, in life, and I often tell my colleagues and, you know, that I see myself as a barrier buster. That in order to, you know, not to keep, you know, keep my eye on the ball, keep my eye on where I'm headed, and not to let the challenges or the clutter of the day get in the way of what you really want to achieve. You know, there's so many things that pull us back, that limit us, that pull the rug out from under us. And I always believe that for being as mission-driven as I can, so that I'm keeping my eye on where I'm headed. And I think that's really important. Where do you want to land? And then see that as the goal and don't get distracted by, you know, what might potentially daily, the clutter of what might get in your way. And I could say that was what sort of armed me with this pursuit of landing this job at UGA Federation and all that I was able to accomplish with my team. When people said to me, no, that's not possible, no, you're not going to get the support for this, you know, not to listen to the naysayers and just have that very positive perspective that it can be achieved.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that because, you know, that's the focus of my whole book that I wrote.
Oh, you know, good.
That's really what I talk about all the time. I mean, there are always going to be things that get in the way. And,
right.
You know, but I think that's really important. And it also sounds like one of the important elements in your journey, at least, was that it wasn't just doing it because it'll be fun, but you felt really
right.
driven to do it because it was like a mission to help. It was much bigger than yourself.
Right.
And that puts a lot of energy into it, right? When it's
right.
something bigger than just yourself.
Right. And I mm-hmm. feel that the it always feels, and maybe you know, at least you know, I agree with you that my work or how I lead my life is that things are much bigger, you know, than myself. And I often talk about, you know, what constitutes caring community and why build caring community. And I think that that has been woven throughout any job that I've had and how people are suffering in this world. And that caring community is incredibly important, and that no person, no matter what their challenge is, should be standing on the outside of community looking in, but should be fully embraced by compassionate and passionate
mm-hmm.
community where no one feels alone. And I would say that I believe that the story of my family life and the issues of loss and illness that has plagued my family and the suffering that I've seen in my family and in the world has really sort of primed me and motivated me. And I feel at one with this belief that we need to, that we are all one. We're all responsible one for the other, and that community is essential. No matter where one falls on the economic continuum, from the very poor and the most vulnerable to people who might have more financial resources, we all face challenges. We might
mm-hmm.
be ill. We might be dealing with cancer. We might have a child with autism. We, you know, there's so many issues that confront individuals, and the knitting and weaving together of community is really, really essential. And that has
mm-hmm.
been my driving force. And I think people need to, you know, see what is it within them that motivates them to rise above who they are in order to contribute to the greater good and to find, you know, I forgot there's a term that we use, you know, but to find that which, you know, motivates us to do as
mm-hmm.
much good as we can.
Yes.
Our
yes.
bliss.
That's beautiful.
What is the bliss? That's it. What
bliss,
is,
yes.
What is your bliss? Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that is beautiful, and that's a really good place for us to end because I think I think that's a really important point. But before you go, let's just let people know how they can, you know, learn more about your dad, about the book and the article that was written.
So I think last week, and you might have it online already,
mm-hmm.
I think Rabbi Levy shared how to access the purchase of her book, and it really tells a beautiful story of my dad. In terms of the article that that she wrote this past week that continues to illuminate who he was. That is in the foreword, getting the PBS movie, or you could just go online and Google Rabbi Robert Marcus or Chaplain Robert Marcus. There were two other books that were written. One is called Rekindling the Flame, and that's about Jewish chaplains of World War II. And another book called The Fighting Rabbis, and that also is about the chaplains of World War II. And in both books, my father is cited. So,
okay, great. I'm gonna post links to all of those on this web post about
great.
This show. So if people go to my website, that'll be on later tonight.
Great. And I thank you, Mara, for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
And thank you so much. You know, thanks for being on the program, and thanks for, you know, introducing me to Rabbi Levy. And I loved reading the book. I mean, it's just very inspiring. So,
okay.
So thank you. And thank you for everything that you're doing.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. And you have a good evening.
You too.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. So we're going to take a brief break, and we have more to come. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Are you or a loved one a Medicare beneficiary? Help save you and Medicare money by stopping Medicare fraud. Fraud happens when Medicare is billed for services or supplies you never receive. There are three easy things you can do to fight fraud. Review your Medicare claims for accuracy, protect your personal information, and be on the lookout for suspicious activity. For more information or to report fraud, call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE or your local SHIP counselor at the Area Agency on Aging at 1-800-252-9240.
I almost spoke all the words that I wanted to say. I almost saw what you look like, bless your wall. But almost doesn't count anymore. And a sure thing never will. That I dream about.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.
All right, and we are back. If you're just joining me, this is Dr. Mara Carpel and your golden years right here on blogtalkradio.com and on drmaracarpel.com. And as usual, it's very hard to follow up my guests. I mean, some of the stories and the interviews are just so inspiring, so wonderful that I feel like, okay, I'm done. But I did promise you that I would talk a little bit about forgiveness and about self-love. So I'm not done. I will talk about those issues. I did hear that our musical guest, Rochelle Rabone, will not be able to make it this evening due to an unexpected event that occurred. And so hopefully everything will be okay with her, and she will be back on the show very soon. So we will have her back on when she's ready. So we won't have a musical guest this evening. Before I talk about forgiveness and self-love, just to fill you in on some news, if you haven't been following me here or haven't read my Facebook post, I have signed with a publisher. Yay! So the book has, you know, I've been working on it for a few years, and now it's in its final edit, just polishing it up before it goes to the editor in a month. And it will be available on, we will have soft launch, as they call it. It will be available on ebook this summer for a very, very low price. So I will let you know that you can go and buy it up. And, you know, I'm happy to sell it at a low price to as many people who want to buy it on ebook. And then in October, we will have what's called a hard launch. And then at that time, it will be available. It'll still be available on ebook at regular price, and it will also be available in paperback form that you can order from any of your booksellers. So, and that'll be October, and I will keep you apprised about exact dates, and I hope you will read it. So that's really big news. If you like to read my blog, then thriveglobal.com, you can read all of my blogs on my website. You may have noticed that I didn't do one for the month of March. I am working on one for the month of April. And also, I had a weekly blog that came out on my website and on Facebook, called Tips for Caregivers Near and Far, and I've taken a little hiatus from that as well. So that will be back on track very soon, but as soon as I got news that my book was picked up by a publisher, all of a sudden I had tons of deadlines. So the work has just begun. I thought I was done when I finished the book. So, you know, I have been trying to keep up with all of it, but I want to do quality work on each of these, and so I have to take a break. As I write about in the book, sometimes you need to take a pause, and so I've taken a little bit of a pause from writing those pieces so that I could focus on meeting the deadlines of the publisher. So that's the news on that front. Also, if you haven't gone to my website, when you go to my website, there will be a little drop-down window that appears, and it is offering you a free download of my guided meditation for inner peace, joy, and vitality. And all you need to do is put your email address in there, and you will immediately get an email back with a link to the MP3, to the recording that I made. And if that doesn't pop up, then you can go to my website and look for free meditation. It is completely free. When you do this, you will be on my mailing list, just for transparency, so that I'm letting you know, and you will be receiving emails with all of the latest information in case you miss it here or on Facebook, and plus a few added things that I won't have anywhere else and a few deals so that you'll know when the book is coming out, all that stuff, and a few free things that you won't be able to get here or from Facebook. You can only get from my newsletter. But if you don't like newsletters, it's quite all right. Just download the MP3 of the guided meditation, and then you can unsubscribe to the newsletter. Nobody is forced to get my newsletter. I know some people don't like to get so much email, so you can unsubscribe at any time or get a couple of newsletters and then unsubscribe. I don't send them very often, so it's not going to flood your mailbox. All right, so that's that. So let me talk a little bit about forgiveness and self-love. So I think they really go hand in hand, because when you forgive other people, you're really doing it for yourself. You know, I think a lot of people are afraid to forgive other people for things that they feel that they've done to them, wrongs that have been done to them, because they feel that if they forgive them, then they're saying it's okay that they hurt them, that, you know, this person was hurtful to them, and that they're open again to being hurt. Forgiveness and saying it's okay, do it to me as much as you want, are not the same thing. Forgiveness is not masochism. It's not asking to be hurt. Forgiveness is actually taking care of yourself. It's letting the weight of that anger and that grudge be taken off your shoulders. So, you know, you can at the same time set limits and let people know that I don't want to be treated that way, and even decide that somebody is incapable of treating you well, and so you're not going to hang out with that person anymore. You're not going to even maybe not even have them in your life anymore, and you can still forgive them. So you can have them both of those things at the same time. You can set limits. No, you can't treat me this way, but I forgive you. So the forgiveness is for yourself. It's letting go of the anger. There's a Buddhist saying that, you know, holding on to a grudge is like drinking poison and hoping that it kills the other person. Because very often you're walking around with this grudge and it's weighing you down, and it has absolutely no effect on the person who you're angry at. They're living their life and, you know, don't even know you're angry at them. But you feel the pain of it. And that's why, you know, forgiveness is really for yourself. And it's really important in the equation of having good relationships with other people to have forgiveness, even for people in prior relationships. Because very often when we hold on to a grudge and we hold on to the anger, then when new people come into our life, we see things in them that remind us of that previous person. Even if they don't do anything wrong, there's just something that reminds us, or we just don't trust them because we think they're going to hurt us like that previous person, and it ruins the relationships that you get into, even ones that have the potential of being very healthy relationships. It actually creates a lack of health in those relationships. So being able to forgive people from your past is really important in having healthy relationships in the present. But the best type of forgiveness is when you learn the lesson. Like I know that when somebody treats me in a particular way, I don't like it. And so now you can go forward. You've experienced this in the past. You can forgive that person, but now going forward, you know what you don't like, so that if somebody appears that they're going to treat you the same way, you can let them know, no, that's not okay with me. And, you know, if it's a healthy relationship, then that other person might say, okay, I didn't know, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that that was something that was hurtful to you. I won't do it. So that, you know, having that awareness of what you don't like is very important in being able to have the things that you do like. Excuse me. All right. And being able to forgive people from the past gives you the emotional energy to be able to move forward and enjoy your current relationship. So, you know, very often when we hold on to a grudge, we're also holding on to anger and resentment. And that anger and resentment can eat away at us. It takes away our energy. It makes us worn out. It doesn't allow us to feel happy and joyful with ourselves or in other relationships. And it really keeps us stuck. And forgiveness releases that anger, and it allows us to feel more joyful and more peaceful. And it can even improve our health, because holding on to anger has actually been linked to health issues, physical health issues, including heart problems and chronic back pain. Those are two areas where anger has found to be a significant factor, heart disease and back pain. Also, gastrointestinal distress. So because when you're holding anger, you're tensing all these muscles and you're releasing all this acid and self in a constant stress reaction, the fight or flight, where you're releasing all the stress hormones. And over time, just like feeling anxious, perpetually anxious, over time it has an effect really on every organ of your body. Now, interestingly, I evaluate veterans for PTSD, that most of the time that's my day job for a majority of the time, aside from a few private practice clients. Mostly I'm evaluating veterans for PTSD. And one of the things that I have found is that many of these veterans, it's very, very hard for them to tell the difference between anger and anxiety. It feels exactly the same. So if I ask them, do you ever have panic attacks, and I give the description of what it feels like to have a panic attack, where your heart is racing and you can't catch your breath and you're shaking and sweating and you feel like, I have to get out of here, or I'm going to die, or I'm going to go crazy, they describe that as what they feel when they feel angry. So as you can see, you know, I've spoken before about the health issues related to holding on to, you know, feeling anxious all the time and always being in that stress reaction. But being angry and resentful has the exact same impact on your health. It will eat away at all of your organs. It will cause major health issues. So for that reason alone, it's important to have forgiveness, to not be walk around constantly with anger and resentment. And as I said, feeling angry and resentful, it's such a negative on you. But giving up that anger and resentment is for you, and it doesn't mean that you have to hang out with that person ever again, or you have to allow people to do the same thing to you that person did. I mean, it's not related. Now, you know, sometimes people choose to stay in relationships where they feel anger and resentment, that something was done years ago, so there was some sort of betrayal in the relationship, whatever it was, and people choose to stay in the relationship. And, you know, and those relationships can be healed. I mean, I've worked with people all the time who've had, you know, something happened in the relationship where one person was hurt by the other, whatever it was, and they stayed. And that's okay. But it will only work if there's forgiveness. Okay? If the person who did the hurting says, I will never do this again, I'm really, really sorry, and shows that they will that they are not doing it anymore. And the person who's been hurt chooses to say, okay, I'm going to stay, then in order for that relationship to regain any level of health, the person who has been hurt needs to actually forgive. Otherwise, it will just be a painful relationship that will never be healthy. So you have to be willing to say, I forgive. Doesn't mean you forget. Forgiveness and forgetting are two different things. It's not forgive and forget. You remember. You can't take that away. And you know what you don't like. And you know, you hold these limits. You don't forget what you don't like, but you forgive. And you don't think about it all the time. You don't dredge it up. So Oprah Winfrey talks about forgiveness as letting go so that the past does not hold you prisoner. So, you know, and that's basically what is happening when you hold a grudge. And then when you move into other relationships and carry it with you, an anonymous author wrote, if you carry the brick from your past relationship to the new one, you will only build the same house. So if there were things in that relationship that were really bad and you don't forgive it when you're in a new relationship, then you're going to have the same kind of relationship. And how often do we see that? People repeating the same pattern over and over and over again, and they wonder, why do I keep having the same kind of relationship again and again? So how do you forgive? That's a really important part of this. How do you forgive? We can say that we want to forgive, but we don't really know how to forgive. Well, first of all, just having that intention to forgive is probably the most powerful step. Not the only step, but it is the first step and the most powerful step toward forgiveness. You have to have the intention to forgive. You have to tell yourself, I want to forgive. And it might take finding somebody who you trust to talk to about it, maybe a good friend or a mental health professional who you can actually talk about what you want to forgive and talk about the intention of forgiving for this, whatever it was, this hurt that you feel. Writing about it in a journal can be helpful, and going back and reading it when you forget why you want to forgive. And then another part of that is actually, and this may be hard for some people, being just willing. It may not be easy, but being open to making an effort to see where that person was coming from when they did what they did. So it's not making excuses for the hurtful behavior, but it's realizing that people hurt others when they are hurt or confused or don't know any better at that time. Oprah Winfrey has a famous saying, when you know better, you do better. So it's likely that that person at that time didn't know better. They may have acted like they knew better, but deep down they really didn't know better. They didn't, you know, they weren't coming from a place of really looking at the whole picture. Or maybe they were hurt in their life and they were, you know, it was their resentment that caused them to hurt you. Like, you know, if you hold resentment, you're going to hurt other people. So when you understand another person, it lets you see their humanity. And when we understand that the author the author of the book, The Relationship Handbook, Pransky writes, when we understand that every misguided action is accompanied by an insecure state of mind, the more misguided the action, the greater the insecurity and fear, then we move closer to forgiveness. and to peace with ourselves and the painful thoughts that have been sitting in our minds tormenting us. And then, you know, sometimes it's helpful to have a ceremony to release and let go of the resentment. So you might write a letter to the person who you thought has hurt you, but don't actually send it. I don't advise sending it. This is just to release it into a piece of paper. Sometimes writing it down helps. And then bury or burn the letter as a symbol to yourself that you're letting it go. There's actually a really powerful feeling that comes when you burn something and say goodbye to it. And as I said, learning from it is really important. Learning from what you could have done differently to prevent the event from occurring. What was your role in this? And then forgiving yourself for playing that role, and you didn't know better either. But telling yourself, now I do know better, so next time I won't allow this to happen. So this is the first step towards self-love. It's forgiveness. Forgiveness of others is a part of self-love, and forgiveness for yourself. And in 2 weeks, when I come back on the air live, I'm going to talk about some other ways to practice self-love. But this is probably the most important part of the equation is forgiveness. All right, so on that note, we're going to end early since Rochelle is unable to come on to the show this evening. And before I go, I just want to let you know what's happening in the next couple of weeks. So as I mentioned, next week I will be taking a week off. We will be playing an encore presentation. I'll be on a trip to New York, so I'll come back and talk about my trip to New York. Hopefully, I'll have some good stories to tell. And then in that following week, which is April 29th, and that week we'll be back here live in Austin, Texas, and we'll be joined by a friend of the show who's been on several times, yoga teacher Steve Kane. And Steve Kane will join us this time from his new home on the West Coast. He always joins us from the East Coast, but now he lives on the West Coast. I'd like to hear how life is out there for him. And he's going to be talking about the secret of enlightenment. The secret of enlightenment, that's a really big topic. So hopefully we can cover that in the time that we have on the program, or we'll have to have him back to continue. And then Kurt Weiss will be the guest artist, and he's been on the program before. We talked about his writing, and at that time he was writing blogs. And now he's joining us from Seattle to talk about his new book that's been published. He's been on book tours around the country, and the book is called Stranded in the Jungle, Jerry Nolan's Wild Ride, a tale of drugs, fashion, the New York Dolls, and punk rock. So Jerry Nolan was a punk rocker, and Kurt Weiss was at one point a punk rocker and a drummer, and he wrote a book about Jerry Nolan. So it'll be really interesting to hear him talk about it. And if you want to hear tonight's program again and read the information from the show and learn about upcoming programs, listen to previous programs, read my blog, all of that is at my website, drmarakarpel.com, drmarakarpel.com. And also for the latest breaking news on all of these fronts, follow me on Facebook, Dr. Mara Karpel, Your Golden Years, and also for news about my book, The Passionate Life by Dr. Mara Karpel on Facebook. And you can hear this evening's program in as soon as 5 minutes from now by going directly to Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Your Golden Years. This evening's program was produced by Accomplice Entertainment, Postal Productions, and Psyched Up Productions, and sponsored by neurologist and memory specialist Dr. Ronald DeVere, and by Storyhouse. And special thanks to my guest, Roberta Liner. And we're looking forward to have Rochelle Rabone join us at some time in the future. Sorry you couldn't make it this evening. And, of course, thank you to Art. And thank you all for listening. Have a peaceful night, an inspiring couple of weeks. And remember, youth has no age. Good night, everyone.
Like lose, it's the same every day.
I just
gotta get out of here.
And I sail away most any day. And I'm all in my hideaway. And I'll be like a cloud.
I can lose it the same every day.
I just
gotta get out of here. Take me back any day to the Isle or the Bay.
I just gotta find peace of mind.
And I sail away most any day. And I'm all in my hideaway.
And I'll dream like a cloud.
Any guidance offered by Dr. Carpel is not intended to replace the advice of your own physician or mental health specialist. Neither Dr. Carpel, her sponsors, nor this station assumes responsibility for the misuse of any of the information given on this show.